Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the second day of January 2019. It's a Thursday, which means tomorrow's Friday. And even though it's a sort of bifurcated, shortened work week, I'm still already ready for the weekend. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Thank you for sticking with us for another year, another exciting year. This is going to be a crazy year. This is going to be nuts. The left is going to go absolutely berserk. You thought they were crazy in 2019. I have a feeling that Bachman-Turner Overdrive's song will get a rewrite by somebody with musical talent about how the crazy's going up to 11 and you ain't seen nothing yet. Like I said, since it is a holiday, and I hope you're still on vacation. I hope you had the vacation days to take off. You know, because the good thing, some companies give you New Year's Eve and New Year's Day off, which is nice. If you work in government, especially if you work in Congress, you probably had the last 2 weeks off because your office likely shut down or nobody was paying attention or the bosses get very generous about there. But I hope you're still off. I hope you're still, you know, recovering from New Year's Day or New Year's Eve. Or, you know, you might have a problem if you're drinking again on New Year's Day nonstop. But, hey, I'm not going to judge. It's going to be sort of a probably. Again, I thought yesterday's show would be short. Or, I mean, New Year's Eve show would be short. And it ended up being long. It would probably be shorter shows for today and tomorrow. Just because, thankfully, mercifully, there's not a whole lot going on in the world. So we'll get to at least a half an hour and we'll see where my mouth takes us and where the news takes us. But as always, you can email the program, Derek@dailycaller.com. You can help the show. I appreciate those of you helping the show a lot at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. There won't be a new interview this week on Friday just because there's literally nobody in town. I could, I suppose, have my friend Brian Darling in for like a year in review or year in preview sort of thing. But he's been sick. And one thing you learn when you have, if you don't have kids yet, you'll learn. Because, you know, you're single or you're just don't have any kids. You don't give a damn about, oh, you're sick. Come on. Don't be such a wuss. Let's go out and have a drink or let's go. Don't be such a baby. Now you hear when you have kids, somebody's sneezes and you're just like, what? Are you sick? Are you sick? Get away. Keep away from me if you're sick. Stay away from me if you're sick. It's not because the kids can't handle being sick. It's that handling kids who are sick is such a... It's horrible. They don't... Quinn is 2.5. And by the way, thanks for all the emails about Quinn's guest hosting or co-hosting on the New Year's Eve show. She's getting to the point where she can string together understandable, coherent sentences. Mostly understandable, semi-coherent sentences. But, you know, she's getting there. She's getting there. And every time she's on, she's way more popular than me. If I had an ego, if I had not even high self-esteem, but normal levels of self-esteem, I would be wildly taken aback by how popular she is. But I got to be honest with you, I can't blame you. I understand. Well, she's so damn cute, you can't help it. But yeah, every time she's on, the emails come in. Oh, I love hearing Quinn's voice. I love hearing Quinn's voice. You know, she's a left-wing lunatic, so you probably wouldn't like her if she hosted. No, I'm just kidding. She's actually very much into private property rights, because every time Bailey takes something that she deems hers, Quinn goes and takes it back. So Quinn is very much into private property rights. So at a young age, she's coming around to the conservative point of view and will definitely reinforce that as time goes on. There are just a couple of things I want to touch on today about the shooting at the church in Texas and the media's reaction to it. There's one in particular that was so stupid. But it's not surprising because it went against the liberal narrative. A good guy with a gun stopped a bad guy with a gun. And they don't like that very much. They want the bad guy with a gun to kill themselves eventually, but they want a high body count so that they can go out there and very earnestly say, this is another example. We need more gun control. So we'll get into that. We'll also touch on the situation in Iraq and how the left is desperately trying to say, well, this is Donald Trump's Benghazi. There's a body count missing from that. There's also another important difference. Troops were sent to aid our people in a timely fashion, unlike Barack Obama, who we still don't know where he was. Where was Barack Obama during the Benghazi attack? Does anybody know? So we'll get to all of that and whatever else comes out of my mouth at the time. But as you heard at the top of the show, hat tip to our great sponsor. I do love these guys. Life Change Tea. Go to getthetea.com now. Check out their selection of delicious teas and other wonderful herbal natural remedies. Check them out. Getthetea.com is the tea. They say it's the tea that makes you go. And I say it definitely is the tea that makes you go. Look, you have Dragon, you low energy? Are you somebody like a low energy Joe Biden? Well, I probably can't help Joe. He's a little too far gone for that. But it can help you. Your body is full of things you don't need that are taking their time getting out, that get stuck in certain places as they're making your way out the body. You need to clean them out. You need to make sure that they're gone so that that part of your body can do what it's designed to do, and that is absorb all the nutrients from your food. You need as much of that absorbing as humanly possible. And that's where Life Change Tea comes in. It cleans out the nooks and crannies. You drink a cup a day. Don't overdo it. Follow the instructions. You get a 30-day supply. You brew up a big gallon of it all at once. And you just drink a cup a day and you will notice a big, big difference. It'll keep you regular on top of everything else. And once you get that stuff out of you, guess what? All the nutrients you eat are being absorbed into your body. And there comes the energy right after it. Go to getthetea.com now. Enter promo code Derek at checkout and you get 10% off your entire order. So you can't beat it. You feel better and you're saving money. Plus you're helping out the program. That's getthetea.com. Promo code Derek at checkout. 10% off your order. Okay. Let's talk about this situation in Iraq. The Iran-based or backed militants. I love how the Washington Post screaming headline today, New Year's Day, was protesters storm U.S. embassy. Protesters. Oh, they're just protesters. No, these are people on the payroll of the mullahs in Iran. These are professionals. What was disturbing and disgusting was that there were many Iraqi government officials out there as well, members of parliament, because they too are Iran-backed. It's amazing what we're willing to let Iran get away with. And how about this? Either we decide that we're going to cede Iraq to Iran, or at least let Iraq figure out what the hell it is. If Iraq can't stand up to its for itself, maybe it shouldn't be an independent country. After this long and this much help that we've given them, it's my same sort of thoughts towards Afghanistan. And you can go ahead and email me and complain that I'm an isolationist or whatever. But at a certain point, countries have to stand on their own. And if the people of Iraq are willing to sit by and let Iran take over, or the people of Iraq are willing to sit by and let militant Islamists take over, so be it. Yes, the world will be a worse off place having another radical Muslim extremist government in the Middle East. But honestly, who cares? The people over there are going to have to stand up for themselves eventually, or they're going to have to deal with the consequences of not standing up for themselves eventually. Shouldn't that be the way it is? In Afghanistan, we're going on 20 years, We're coming up on 20 years of being in Afghanistan, and the people there are still just as backwards as they once were. They're not even out of the Stone Age, realistically. They don't really particularly understand. This is the mistake that I think a lot of Americans make, and I think I made this mistake too. When we first went into Afghanistan, when we first went into Iraq, and I think in Iraq in particular, the Bush administration thought this as well, that we would be, herald in a great leap forward, if you forgive the phrase, in modernity in the area. There was nowhere to go but up for Afghanistan. They literally were living in dirt huts, and you wouldn't know what century it was. You would think it, in certain areas, you'd think this is pre-biblical times. What in the hell is going on here? And you can't believe that something like that, a place like that, that backwards and that isolated, could still exist on the earth today. But they do, and they exist all over the place. We are the exception, not the rule in this country. But we thought, well, people will just want to be free. You heard about the Taliban destroying the statues, the ancient statues, anything not Muslim must be destroyed, and oppressing women and all of that. And you think, people must be in hell. The people must be in hell. They just want to be free. You know, we have that song, people everywhere just want to be free. People everywhere don't have a concept of what freedom is. And we need to accept that as a country. We really do need to accept that as a country. Afghanistan had every opportunity to, and every advantage, certainly the advantages that our country when it was founded didn't have, and no other free country had when it was founded. And that is an example to follow. And a country there willing to show the example and to implement the example. We were there, we were willing to bend over backwards and do anything, including putting the lives of our soldiers on the line to liberate Afghanistan from the Taliban and help them set up a government, institute freedom. And we did to a certain degree. Girls no longer have to be covered like they're Casper the Friendly Ghost, and they are learning now. It is not against the law to teach a girl how to read or do math anymore. That's how backwards and we're talking about here. But the rest of it didn't take. We seem to think that the rest of the world just wants to be free, and the rest of the world doesn't have a concept of freedom. So they don't really yearn to be free. If you're a goat herder in Tora Bora and you don't have electricity, you're not going to have much of a concept of what freedom is. So your life is whatever the person with the most guns and most number of followers comes through and tells you it is. And they don't come through every day. They're mostly leaving you alone because you live in the middle of nowhere and just herd goats. So in general, we think they want to be free, and maybe they were free in their mind. Maybe that is their concept of freedom. But realistically, they weren't sitting over there waiting to be liberated. They were sitting over there still harboring the resentments that have lasted hundreds and thousands of years over there, the tribal resentments, the warlord mentality. So once the Taliban was rousted, do you really think what they thought, you know, what does Hamid Karzai want us to do? What is the new laws of the lands? No, there's no law. They don't know where Kabul is. They've probably never been more than 10 miles from where they were born. They don't give a damn what the government in Kabul says or tries to do or wants to do or even is headed by. They're unimpacted by it. And we're over here and we're thinking, well, if we just help them more, if we help them longer, if we prop them up more, it'll take more money, it'll take a little more time, and they aren't really making progress. Now, there's some people that are making progress, obviously, in places like Kabul, they are. It's more of a city. It's, you know, instead of living in a world like 2,000 years ago, they're living in a world 150 years ago. I guess that's advancement. But realistically, the rest of the country, and the same goes for Iraq, the people don't have a concept of what freedom is. So they don't really yearn for it. They don't want their government to come along and kill them, which, you know, Saddam Hussein would do, which the Taliban would do. But they also don't want to go to bat. You know, people in a neighboring village 40 miles away that you've never been to, they're being oppressed. Oh, well. You know, the odds are you wouldn't find out about it until it's long done because, you know, you don't have electricity, you don't have the internet. But in general, you don't care. Your world is your world. And outside of it, what goes on with it, the Cold War, I bet, aside from when in 1979 the Russians invaded Afghanistan, the Cold War didn't really have much of an impact on this part of the world and these people. They were indifferent towards it, if they were aware of it at all, because they're busy, their daily lives are for survival. Genuine survival. You know, I've got a farm, I've got to make sure that my family has enough food, I've got to make sure that we have water, and we have to treat the water, boil it, or whatever you have to do in order to be able to drink it. That's their world, that's their life. They weren't sitting there. There was no founding fathers in this, you know, that we had in this country. Thank God we were further advanced and we had people, we'd gone through the Enlightenment. We had deep thinkers and philosophical thinkers who were asking the right questions about the existence of humanity and the purpose of government and the idea of liberty. And that's how we came to be. There is no tradition of that in this part of the world. You know, you may sit there, and I'm sure some liberals are going, well, that's horribly racist. How can you say that? Blah, blah, blah. Point, prove me wrong. Show me where I'm wrong. Show me where the great Muslim philosopher is opining on personal liberty that resembles anything like we have in this country, or in the, and you won't find it. It is about subservience. Islam is about subservience. There's nothing wrong with that if you want to live your life subservient to God. But the radical form of that is you will live your life subservient to God. And I will make sure you live your life subservient to God. And oh, by the way, I'm going to decide what it is that God says. And I'm going to make sure, therefore, that you are subservient to me. That's what a large part of that part of the world is like. The people of Iran are learning that firsthand from 1979 until now. They are ruled by people who are claiming that they're doing all that they're doing in the name of Allah. All the oppression, and you know these people behind the scenes are, you know, they have the internet. They shut it off for the public so they can't coordinate their protests against the government. But you know behind the scenes, they're big porn viewers. You know they're huge porn watchers. You know that they're drinking. We hear all the stories, even in pious Saudi Arabia, where the member of, there's like, almost everybody in the country seems to be a member of the royal family, but members of the royal family, they get on their planes in their garb, their traditional garb, say goodbye to everybody, and then they close the door to the jet, they take that off, they put on Western clothes, and they bust out the booze that they hide on the plane, and they're drinking and partying. You know, there's no booze allowed in the kingdom, but boy howdy, once you get out of that airspace, it's game on. It's hypocrisy. Just, you know, hypocrisy is not unique to any race, any culture, any religion. Most of this stuff is used as a cudgel, as a weapon against people. So I think we need to start recognizing that maybe things in the Middle East are never going to come around if people aren't willing to stand up for themselves. We can't stand them up for them, or we can't stand up for them, or we shouldn't stand up for them. You want to make them a colony and rule over them? Then maybe you could. But we don't want to do that, nor should we do that. So sooner or later, we should come to the point where we cut bait and say, you know what? We've done all we can. It's not taking, or you're going to have to take it from here. Whatever it is, we are not going to be your sugar daddy. We are not going to be your protector. And that situation where you have Iranian-backed militants who are killing Iraqi citizens, killing them by the truckload, if the Iraqi citizens aren't willing to stand up and take care of these people, however you take care of these people. I don't care if they see a courtroom or they see a pile of dirt. I honestly don't care. They're evil people and they should be put down. They should be dealt with, but I'll leave that to their victims to figure out. Sooner or later, they're going to have to say, you guys have to deal with this. And if the Iraqi people are willing to put up with it, then that's what the Iraqi people get. We gave them a shot. Another strong man will rise, whether it is somebody from within Iraq or somebody with the Iranian mullah's hand up their backside, working their mouth. I couldn't care less what it is. It would be better for us and the rest of the world if they came to a good conclusion, but we can't guarantee it, nor should we try. And if it costs thousands or tens or hundreds of thousands of lives, so be it. Everybody has to learn eventually to stand up on their own as a country and figure out what kind of country you're going to be. And us sitting there risking American lives is not, and losing American lives and spending a boatload of money is never going to make people wake up to the idea of freedom. They have to come to it themselves. It has to come from internally. It has to be, they need a George Washington. They need their own Benjamin Franklin. And we're not going to give it to them. They could use ours. It's all written down. You can read about it all you want. But the idea and the desire for freedom has to come from within if it's ever going to come at all. And I'm not sure it's ever going to come at all in this region. So these couple hundred or more militants were rambling in the street. Iran set them up because some of them had been killed recently and they weren't too happy about it. Of course, they're not taken to the streets in Baghdad over the people that these militants are killing, which again tells you something. But they ended up sort of storming the U.S. embassy, at least the grounds, and burning things and smashing things and doing all. That's how you can tell that it's not an actual, that it's a manufactured rage mob, because manufactured rage mobs have parameters, you know? They have parameters where, all right, well, we're going to go this far. Don't go any further because then, you know, it'll provoke a response. And we don't want the response. The response we could have used, and I might have been tempted to use were I president of the United States, was, yeah, let's just bomb the living shit out of them. Let's kill them all. Let's shoot indiscriminately into this rioting crowd on our grounds. They're invading the United States of America. Cooler heads prevailed and things have calmed down over there. But the fact that they had parameters, that they stopped, that we had people inside the embassy that did not come in contact with these people, that did not get taken by these people, that were not harmed by, that lets you know that there were parameters. 1979, they didn't really have parameters when they stormed the U.S. embassy in Tehran. They took people hostage. They were in a genuine frenzy. This was a professional riot, unlike 1979. So what's funny, though, is the left is trying to portray this as this is Donald Trump's Benghazi. This is the failed Ben Rhodes, the Obama foreign policy advisor, who is just terrible. He's a terrible person. He was a terrible foreign policy advisor. He was trying to call this Benghazi. It's kind of funny because Ben Rhodes was involved in essentially ensuring that Iran gets a nuclear weapon and sending them $150 billion, including a ton of money in cash on pallets in exchange for American hostages. He supported paying ransom and giving them the means by which to continue to fund terrorism in a way that's untraceable with giant pallets of cash, both dollars and euros. And him sitting there criticizing the Trump administration for this situation is laughable. But of course, he's an NBC News contributor, so he gets a large audience through which to spread his lies. That's just the way the world works, kids. It's garbage. But there's a couple of important differences between Benghazi and what happened the other day in Iraq. One, the president of the United States responded. The president of the United States sent troops to protect our people and our property over there. He did so in a timely fashion and has deployed troops to the region, 750 more, ready to go in at a moment's notice should this angry mob return. No such steps were taken in Benghazi. As a matter of fact, it was 13 hours of a sustained attack before any help arrived, whereas our military with bases all over the world could have gotten help there immediately. I remember Barack Obama being interviewed after Benghazi saying, well, as soon as I heard what was going on, I immediately said, I ordered my team to give them everything they possibly could. Had to get out there, help those people any way they can. That was allegedly 4 hours into the 13-hour attack. That would mean that for the next 9 hours, nothing was done or nobody could get there. Of course, nothing was done and nobody got there because Barack Obama, well, there are two choices. Barack Obama was either lying or somebody disobeyed a direct order from the President of the United States and left Americans to die. Which option is better? I don't know. Neither, really. But those seem to be the only two options possible, since there was a strike force ready to go pretty quickly in Italy and were told to stand down. In fact, let's go down memory lane. I'll go find the audio. Guys, the journalist's name was Kyle Clark, and he's on a station out in Colorado, and he asked the President of the United States about his response to Benghazi and whether or not this was during the 2012 election. Remember, Barack Obama was insisting it wasn't a terrorist attack. There's no terrorist attack on my watch. I am Barack Obama. Don't you know who I am? Listen to this exchange. I'm going to play you the whole bit and the whole setup. And at one point at the end, after being asked a second time, because Barack Obama notice also that Barack Obama doesn't, I mean, he's doing, they do these sorts of satellite tours campaigns do, where you get 5 minutes with this station and then 5 minutes with that station, and they go all around the country, but they're all in one place. And it's local news anchors who mostly just kiss ass. They're just worthless, and they don't ask serious questions. They don't ask tough questions. They don't ask important questions. They're just excited and giddy to be talking to the President of the United States. And so they get a pass on that. To Kyle Clark's credit, he doesn't fall for that crap. He actually asks a serious question, to which Barack Obama tries to give the typical answer that if anybody asks a serious question, a local news anchor, you just give them the general talking points and you move on. Kyle doesn't. He goes back for a second bite at the apple, and that's where Barack Obama gets interesting. Pay attention to the second time around here and what Barack Obama says about what happened as soon as he heard about this, keeping in mind we still to this day don't know when Barack Obama was briefed on Benghazi. We heard one story that it was about, soon after it started, somewhere neighborhood 4 hours maybe, it got to the president. But we don't know where Barack Obama was. We don't actually know exactly when his briefing occurred. And we don't know what really happened that day. It's weird that we don't know where the president was that day, considering we're supposed to know where the president is all the time, right? The press pool gets very upset. Remember when President-elect Donald Trump snuck out and went to dinner with family and friends during the transition, and the media was like, he left without the press pool. This is an outrage. You can't do that. What if something happens? We need to be there to cover it. Where was Barack Obama during the Benghazi attack? Why doesn't anybody care? Well, because it was no place good. That would be my guess. No place that would help Barack Obama's legacy, because he sure as hell wasn't in the Situation Room. He sure as hell wasn't on the ball. But listen to this, paying a particular attention. I want to play the whole thing. It's like a minute and a half, because the first bite of the apple sets up the second bite of the apple. And this anchor here, Kyle Clark, doesn't play the president's kiss-ass game, and Barack Obama has no answer.
Mr. President, let's begin with the news of the day. Were the Americans under attack at the consulate in Benghazi, Libya, denied requests for help during that attack? And is it fair to tell Americans that what happened is under investigation and we'll all find out after the election?
Well, the election has nothing to do with four brave Americans getting killed and us wanting to find out exactly what happened. These are folks who served under me that I had sent to some very dangerous places. Nobody wants to find out more what happened than I do. But we want to make sure that we get it right, particularly because I have made a commitment to the families impacted as well as the American people. We're going to bring those folks to justice. So we're going to gather all the facts, find out exactly what happened, and make sure that it doesn't happen again. But we're also going to make sure that we bring to justice those who carried out these attacks.
Were they denied requests for help during the attack?
Well, we are finding out exactly what happened. I can tell you, as I've said over the last couple of months since this happened, that the minute I found out what was going on, I gave three very clear directives. Number one, make sure that we are securing our personnel and doing whatever we need to. Number two, we're going to investigate exactly what happened to make sure it doesn't happen again. Number three, find out who did this so we can bring them to justice.
Now, did you ever hear a big-time news reporter ask Barack Obama and press Barack Obama on that one? No, you didn't. What's telling about Barack Obama's answer there is that I think it's pretty clear he's lying. Well, the first thing I did upon hearing about this is do everything to secure everybody. That's what I was talking about earlier. Well, nothing was done, Mr. President. Nothing was done for 13 hours. This attack went on for 13 hours. So who disobeyed your direct order? If, in fact, you gave that order, who disobeyed it? Who was it? We don't know because Barack Obama was never asked by anybody else this question in the limited satellite time, and it didn't occur to Kyle to follow up with that. So we can assume that he's either lying or somebody directly disobeyed his order. Or the other possibility is because what's curious, the first point taken by itself, I hadn't heard this in a while, first point taken by itself, those two options I present are the only two realistic options available. Somebody disobeyed you, or you're lying. Then he goes into the other two things, which is find out exactly how this happened and find out who did this. Now, why would you, while an attack is ongoing, why would you say, order your staff to find out who did this? I want an investigation launched into how this happened and who did this. Well, it's ongoing. So theoretically, the people who did it are still doing it. So you could then dispatch somebody to go and stop it and go and kill them or capture them, which would give you a pretty good indication of who did it. And then from them, you could discern how it happened, right? Unless, of course, Barack Obama didn't find out about this while it was ongoing, which, again, the only way to know that, the only way to understand that, the way to get that information would be to know where Barack Obama was during the time of the attack. Kind of weird that we don't know that. Kind of weird that this doesn't occur to journalists, and it didn't occur to journalists at the time that, hey, wait a second, he had just heard the president say that while an attack is ongoing, he wants an investigation into how this came to be, and he wants to find out who did this so we could bring him to justice. Well, they're doing it right now, Mr. President. Theoretically, if you're on the ball, if you're being briefed in a timely fashion, unless you were engaged in something else that took you out of the White House and, you were just too busy to do your job, wouldn't you say? I mean, maybe I'm crazy here, but it seems like there's some information missing from this whole affair. But of course, the media had no interest in this whole affair because it made Barack Obama look bad, so they immediately just ignored these sorts of questions as quickly as they could. At the earliest possible convenience, they moved on from Benghazi and began the ridiculing of Republicans. They're just bringing up Benghazi. They're just not. They're obsessed with Benghazi. It was a protest that got out of hand. You know, anybody who's, you know, just happens to know anything about the Middle East, they were they know that there are roving bands of people with rocket-propelled grenades and automatic weapons and hand grenades walking around Benghazi at any moment, and who knows what could set them off. Maybe somebody at the annex there in Benghazi looked at them cross-eyed, and they just decided to start killing Americans. That was the story we were told. We later learned that it was a planned terror attack. They kind of had an idea that it was coming, and the White House ignored it, along with the year's worth of pleas for more security from over there. They just ignored it all. There's a lot more to this story that we don't know, that we may never know, but we should never stop asking, because there's a reason they don't want us to know. They don't want us to know. And I think it's mostly having to do with Barack Obama's legacy. Remember, the whole thing, and they tried to pin Benghazi along with all the other protests that went on in the Middle East on an internet video. Well, first of all, Libya was a failed state at the time, thanks to Hillary Clinton's policy and Barack Obama's policy in Libya. They'd allowed and aided the taking out of Muammar Gaddafi, who was no threat to the United States whatsoever at this point. He had given up his weapons of mass destruction program and was just not a good guy, but he was terrorizing his own people, which, frankly, we shouldn't really care about. But they created a failed state so they could appear tough. They created a failed state in Libya so they could appear tough. And this attack in Benghazi grew out of that. They don't want you to think about that either. What they did do was blame the internet video that got off. It was a really terrible video. And they said that this was that there was fault of that. And they imprisoned a guy named Nikula Nikula for a year for violation of his probation or whatever, because he posted the internet video. But the only reason they went after him was because they'd scapegoated him. Blamed him for Benghazi. And you had to go, you pot committed at that point. You have to go all the way through the entire thing. You can't just say it's this guy's fault and then let this guy go. If you throw somebody in jail, well, then your case, or it's his fault, is that much stronger. Everything about Benghazi was a scam, a lie, an orchestrated fraud on the American people, and the media willingly went along with it. Now, and they say, well, it's no big deal. We know what it was. It was just a protest that got out of hand, or it was an attack, but it was in the midst of a protest, and it was spurred on by this internet video, and Republicans tried to make something of it. Republicans wasted so much time and money investigating it, when realistically, Democrats didn't even bother asking questions. Democrats and the media, I mean. So, smash cut to the other day when there was the riot and assault on the U.S. embassy in Iraq. And you have all of these journalists saying, well, this is Donald Trump's Benghazi. This is Donald Trump's Benghazi. It's not Donald Trump's Benghazi because an innocent, non-connected guy didn't get thrown in jail for a year. Four people didn't die, and it didn't take 13 hours to respond to it. Nothing at all like Benghazi. It doesn't have journalists running around saying this is no big deal. There's nothing to see here. Move on. It's not a scandal. It's not a terrorist attack. It was a protest that got out of hand. That's a significant difference between Benghazi and the embassy riot in Baghdad. And it's sickening that the media would use or try to use Benghazi to try and slander Donald Trump, to smear Donald Trump, to sit there and say, well, he's just as bad as Barack Obama. When you guys spent years to this day still insisting that there was nothing at all whatsoever that went wrong in Benghazi. There was nothing. Barack Obama did everything right by the book, and there's no scandal there. This was a Republican-created scandal. The hypocrisy is dripping like sweat off a fat guy at a summer barbecue, and they're all just sitting there smirking and smiling because they know that they'll get away with it. Yes, this little podcast will point out the hypocrisy. Some other people will point out the hypocrisy, probably, I hope. I don't know if they'll play the Kyle Clark video or audio, but I hope they will, to draw the connection. But in general, they'll get away with it. Why? Because the referees are on their team. The Democrats and the media are on their team. And you can brazenly and boldly lie when you know they're on your team, when the refs have got your back. And the Democrats have that luxury. And the media have that luxury because, you know, who's going to call out the media aside from some random guy on a podcast? All right, the last thing I want to talk, because, yeah, I am just some random guy with a podcast. I happen to have an interesting resume and knowledge of this stuff and think of this, but realistically, I'm just a guy. I'm not a journalist. I'm not going to get access to Barack Obama to be able to ask him these questions. I'm not going to get access to Chuck Todd to ask him these questions. These cowards run from people like me who might actually challenge them. They only sit around and throw and sniff each other. That's it. They're like a bunch of dogs at the dog park sniffing each other's butts. That's it. If you don't want to play that game, they're not going to go anywhere near you. Lastly today, I want to talk about the situation down in Texas, and only because I saw the horrible thing, two people killed, and that monster went in there and shot them, but he was taken out within somewhere 3 to 6 seconds, whatever it was. He was shot in the head. He was just done. He was down because a guy named Jack Wilson pulled his pistol and took him out, and thank God that he did. But I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about this piece in the USA Today, the nation's motel doormat. They tweeted it out. Opinion: Jack Wilson is exactly the type of person you want around with a gun because he's a firearms instructor. But we know nothing about the at least six other parishioners who also appeared to draw their handguns. And that's terrifying. And that's terrifying. This is the hot take from Elvira Diaz, who writes for the Arizona Republic, that the USA Today decided the world needed to know, and not just keep her stupidity in the boundaries of Arizona, let the whole world know. The headline that they had, armed even in church, Texas shooting is about a lot more than Jack Wilson's heroism. And the subheadline, Jack Wilson is a hero, but why were so many other parishioners armed, and how did the shooter get his gun given his criminal history? Why, it's almost like gun laws are not followed by criminals, you freaking moron. She, Elvira, writes, and it's not the mistress of the dark, this is the mistress of the dumb. Jack Wilson is a hero, all right. It took him only 6 seconds to kill a gunman at a Texas church, saving countless lives. Unfortunately, that kind of split-second heroism has been turned into a PR tool by gun advocates. Oh, no. Unlike the tragedies that go on around the country that are turned into PR tools by leftists because the body count is high because there wasn't somebody there to save lives. God, what a piece of garbage. The reality of Wilson's heroism is a lot more complex. He wasn't just an ordinary parishioner, as gun advocates may want you to believe. The church volunteer security team member is a firearms instructor, gun range owner, and a former reserve deputy with the local sheriff's department, according to a New York Times detailed account. Telling that this piece of garbage in a neighboring state to Texas is a lot closer. She could have read local stuff, but she goes to the New York Times. In other words, he's exactly the kind of man you want around with a firearm. But we know nothing about the at least six other parishioners who also appeared to draw their handguns. That's terrifying. The real story isn't heroism. Of course, there wouldn't... That wouldn't matter to the churchgoers of the community, roughly 18,000 residents, right? What matters is that Wilson saved them with a single shot, and other gun-wielding parishioners were ready just in case Wilson failed. But have we really reached a point when each of us needs to carry a firearm everywhere we go? Gun advocates certainly think so. No, they don't. You lying piece of human debris. She's building up straw men and writing. It says, shame on the USA Today for running this. Gun advocates don't think everybody should be armed all the time. They don't want people who don't want to be armed to be armed. They want people to have the freedom to choose whether to arm themselves. There's a huge, huge difference. Texas has one of the nation's least restrictive gun laws, including allowing armed security at houses of worship and allowing parishioners to bring their weapons to church. Gun advocates didn't waste any time after the recent church incident to promote the idea of arming oneself. the Second Amendment gives the right to bear arms to Americans. It doesn't. It says the government can't mess with it, that we're born with it. And that isn't going anywhere. But that constitutional amendment doesn't spell out the types of firearms Americans should bear, nor does it give Americans the right to sell them to anyone to carry anywhere. What planet does this woman have her head up her ass in? The First Amendment doesn't, it says you have a right to free speech, but it doesn't say what words you can use. Would you use that sort of mentality, you piece of garbage? A gunman in West blah, 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 she goes through and goes on. We know firearms are readily available to anyone who wants one, really. And that's part of the problem. Sunday's shooting isn't just about Jack Wilson's heroism. It's about how the shooter got a hold of a weapon in the first place, given his criminal record. Yeah, it's almost like criminals don't follow the law, you idiot. And maybe that's why some people choose to arm themselves just in case something like this happens. But no, you know what, Elvira Diaz, you go to your little gun-free zones and you hang out there blissfully ignorant with your fellow liberal friends. And when the feces hits the fan, figure maybe in your last few seconds of existence, you can sit around and scratch your head and go, doesn't this shooter know that they're not supposed to bring a weapon to this area? That's why we're here. We're here. We're supposed to be safe. You're violating our safe space. And maybe you can quickly form a drum circle that will convince the killer or would-be killer to change their ways and go, you know what? I was going to murder you, but now that I realize that I've violated state and federal gun laws by illegally possessing a firearm I'm not supposed to have, that's a little bit dirty. That's a bridge I will not cross. Therefore, I am going to lay down my arms and surrender myself and maybe join your drum circle. This is the left. They can't accept that what happened in Texas blows up their narrative. And a good guy with a gun never does anything. And that's a problem. It's just a myth, the myth of the good guy with a gun. We were told, and we've been told for years. And a good guy with a gun takes out a bad guy with a gun, and they have to find a way to crap all over it because people might begin to realize that, oh my God, this actually happens all the time. Good guys with guns stop bad guys with guns pretty damn regularly, and that's a good thing, and thank God for good guys with guns. But nope, they don't want you to think of that. Think of the other people in there. What are their backgrounds? What do we know? We know that they were ready to kill that son of a bitch if Mr. Wilson wasn't able to do it first. Thank God for all of them. Thank God for all of them. And Elvira Diaz, if you don't like it, stay in your little gated community, live your life in gun-free zones, and see how well that works out for you, because most of these mass shootings occur in where, wait for it, da-da-da-da, gun-free zones, because the criminals know that they're safe in there thanks to moron enablers on the left like you. Well, that's all the time we're going to take of your day today. Hopefully you're off. Hopefully you're doing something fun. I don't know what I'm going to do today. I'm going to try and sleep and get ready to do another show. And I'm doing radio today and tomorrow too, so it's not even really like easy time for me. I can sort of take it easy on the podcast, but 3 hours of radio is 3 hours of radio, whether I'm ready for it or not. So you got to be ready for my blathering into your ears tomorrow for the Friday edition. Maybe I'll do an in-person interview with Brian Darling if he's not still typhoid married. I don't know. You'll just have to tune in tomorrow to find out. Thank you for listening. Thanks for everything. I'll see you tomorrow.
The minute I found out what was going on, I gave three very clear directives. Number one, make sure that we are securing our personnel and doing whatever we need to. Number two, we're going to investigate exactly what happened to make sure it doesn't happen again. Number three, find out who did this so we can bring him to justice.